The Jack B Show, where pit smarts meet street smarts. Now, here's your host, Jack Berusian.
And welcome, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Let's call this one the 20th of May, folks. Another expiration cycle. Yes, we had an expiration on Friday, May expiration. And, of course, now we get into the June expiration period, which brings the quadruple expiration into play. Remember, June is when we historically have our quarterly expiration, and it signals the beginning of summer. It's usually that June expiration which gives off the, I guess, if nothing else, the spring, end spring, beginning of summer season, which is coupled with a very slow trade in the market. Now, let's see if that happens, because we happen to be, if you haven't noticed, at all-time highs in the stock market. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. We've got a good show for you today. In fact, we got Alan Rohrbach, who's going to come on. He's taking a surprise Monday day for us. In fact, usually we have him on Tuesdays or Thursdays if we can help it. But I wanted him in Monday. In fact, he volunteered to come in, and I'm glad he did, because I wanted him to talk a little bit about what's coming on during the course of this week. And seeing how it's a holiday week, and yes, folks, these next 2 weeks are actually what we would consider to be holiday weeks. Remember, you have got the Memorial Day weekend, which is next Monday. We have a shortened trading day on Friday. We have very little information coming out between now and then. And then, of course, after Memorial Day, going into the beginning of June, is a very slow period for the market, aside from the end of the month and end of the period where we do see that artificial mark. But we have got a very interesting scenario, folks. I was on Kudlow's radio show, Larry Kudlow's radio show on Saturday morning. For those of you that don't listen to it, you should listen to it. It's a syndicated show. In fact, he's got more people that listen to that radio show than he has watching CNBC. But for the 20 or 30 million people that were listening, and it was a very interesting topic, you know, because we had Jim LeCamp on, and he and I were talking a little bit. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned, and Jim said, Jack, you're so right about it, is that there's a story that nobody is talking about, folks, which needs to be addressed. There happens to be, when you talk to portfolio managers, a shortage of physical stock out there in the marketplace, and it is being chased by too much capital. So you have too much capital chasing too few shares. Now, we've only seen this happen a couple of times. Last time was back in the 80s is when we saw it happen. We didn't see it happen in the 90s, but somebody brought that to my attention, and I laughed, and I said, you know what? If it happened in the 90s, folks, all right, then we have not yet begun to see this market go up. Because back in the 90s, when we saw the market go to that all-time high, it had a PE on the S&P of 40. That's right, folks. A 40 PE on the S&P when we were at those all-time highs last time in 99. You know where we are right now? We're at a 18.8. Oh, I'm sorry, check that. A 14.8 multiple, according to what my earnings are for this year. I'm looking at $115 a share, folks. Do the math. If we get back to the norm, and this is what I said, you know, where 20 million people could listen to me on Saturday, if we get back to the 16 multiple, which is the norm for forward earnings, with the $115 a share that we are looking at, which is not outrageous, you're looking at an 1850 S&P, folks. How about that? That is the kind of move that you want to be in. And it's the kind of move why I said what I said on Kudlow's show, and I'll say it again. Use 3 to 5% breaks to buy this market. You want to stay long. But we had a couple of other things that have happened. I do want to point out the Russell over 1,000 for the first time. That was very interesting. I love the fact that we saw that happen. I've been a big proponent of the small cap stocks. I love the fact that small caps are leading the way. And if you notice, tech stocks are also starting to be a real leader here. It's something that our good friend the mayor, Aaron Reinglass, pointed out to us. Gold, which had fallen 8 straight sessions, finally got a bounce today. You know, those bear bets now are at record levels for gold. What I mean by that is you are starting to see short interest on the bear futures the gold futures contract and the short side of the GLD now at record levels. Okay, why is that? Well, first of all, there's no inflation out there, and that's first. Number one, and number two, I should say, inflation in and of itself was completely miscalculated. Even by myself. Look, had you talked to me a year ago, I would have said to you, there is no way that the world can print up this kind of money and yet have inflation under control. Yet that's exactly what we are seeing. Now, the other thing that I thought was very interesting, that we had a Fed governor, and I believe it was Fisher, that came out and said that, you know, don't look for the Fed to stop expanding their balance sheet and purchasing bonds. No. Look for them to taper it off. You know what I mean? Look for them to slow it down. Now, that was a very interesting comment, especially from a marketplace that is looking for signals from the Fed as to when they will end quantitative easing. So what he is essentially saying to us, don't look for it to end. Look for it to taper off. And if inflation is not a problem, folks, which according to my calculations between CPI and PPI and commodity prices, it is not the problem, then you know what? Then we're looking at a situation where the market can continue to go up. Now, the last thing that I want to point out before bringing our co-host out for us is the fact that housing. Remember housing? Remember the fact that you had everybody, all the naysayers telling us that it was just a tiny little blip? Well, guess what, folks? You know what? Inventory is now short. Housing inventory has not been this short in a long time. And you have got a Federal Reserve that is encouraging buyers. You know, anecdotally, I'm just going to share this with you. You know, my block is one that we've got a lot of tear down rebuilds. And I have not seen anything torn down and rebuilt for the last 5 years, maybe 6 years. We have 3 on our block right now, today, that have been torn down and are being rebuilt and are already sold. Folks, I don't know whether you see it in your neighborhood, but I'm seeing it in mine. The real estate market is back. We're now at levels that we were back in 06, and without the horrible foundation of bad loans, which is really one of the things that was underpinning what turned out to be that bubble in housing. But I like the fact that we're seeing a healthy move in housing. It's one of the things that really, I think, is going to keep this market going. And here to help us shed some light on everything that we see happening right now is our good friend. You've heard him before on this show before, Alan Rohrbeck. Alan, how are you, my friend?
Great, Jack. How you doing
today? I'm doing great. And look, let's start. I got a few things that I want to run by you. Number one, we have got a market that has gotten now, and I want to start by saying this, to your target areas. You've given us a couple of levels. I am not one that likes to get in front of a freight train. I always say that to people. Whenever I hear people trying to pick a top, I'm like, guys, you know, don't do that. It's like getting in the way of a freight train. But if you're long, say, 10 contracts of S&Ps, and you get to certain levels that make sense, even if it means maybe buying some downside protection, I'm a big believer in being very diligent. You gave us a couple of levels. We're at that 69 level, which I think you pointed out to us before in the futures.
That was indeed one of them.
And I just wanted to hear a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about some of the other things that are driving the market. And then I want to get your opinion on the fundamental side, which I was talking about on Kudlow's show, about the stock shortage, the physical stock shortage that we're seeing. But let's start with the levels that we're approaching these days.
Well, first of all, let me absolutely confirm what you just said about don't get in front of a freight train. This isn't necessarily time to be bearish as such. More so, especially, you know, even beyond futures, if you're holding cash stocks, and obviously they're probably where you have some capital gains in them, it's more so enlightened to get some low-cost protection below the market than it is to start selling out cash stock positions. And right in line with that is the fact that these technical objectives are minimums. They are, in other words, the lowest target on the upside, or when the market's on the way down, the minimum break you might expect. So when I gave you 1669, there's other just very interesting aspects of that now, but that is the minimum target for the gap higher the market left. Lo and behold, Jack, a whole 2.5 weeks ago on the non-farm payrolls report. I mean, you gapped up, left a low that day.
This market's giving us instant gratification. I got to tell you, Alan. It's surprising me. It's surprising a lot of people. Here is really, and I guess what I really want to get to, and I want your opinion on this. I got into an argument this weekend with somebody that started to compare this market to 99. And they were talking about how there's so much fluff in it and how it's so overbought. And I said, wait a second. I almost got angry. I said, wait a second. Why? And they said, well, because it's at the same levels. And I said, are you out of your mind? I said, in 99, we were trading with a 40 PE on the S&P. And he said, well, what are you talking about? And I said, the S&P was making X, and we were trading at 40 times X. That's why we got to those levels. We are nowhere near that. We are now trading at, from what I can tell, a 14.8, maybe a 15 multiple, depending on what your earnings level is. But number one, I guess, you know, do you subscribe to that? I guess is what I would ask you. And number two, if you do, you know, you can see an expansion to, say, 20 or 22 on the multiple, which could take us up a lot further in this market.
Well, in fact, Jack, that was the other interesting aspect I was getting at regarding this 1669 level. In fact, the market on another level we often share with the viewers, the difference oscillator, that's the difference between the current price and the underlying long-term average. I use the 41-week moving average. The market is into this week, 1,673 would be $190 above the 41-week average. Now, what's interesting about that as it relates to what you just said? That is the all-time high oscillator stretch out. So if the market snaps that rubber band, it escapes from 190 over, anything above 1,673 by a fair margin. It's a big reading, so you don't say, well, 1,974 would do it. But let's say if you're above 1,680 on this week's close, you're out to a new all-time reading, which, much like the multiple expansion, Jack, means you could go a lot further. And the interesting part of the only time they ever saw that 190 over, April of 1999.
You know, it's funny you say that, because I know that people are comparing these two times, and I just have such a hard time with this comparison.
Fundamentally, they're very different.
They
You're
are very different.
Right,
in fact, you know what? In fact, Jack Bogle was on,
Bogle, B-O-G-L-E.
Right, yes, because he was on CNBC talking about that very thing. And I was like, you know, I had to actually turn it up, because when I heard him talking multiples, I thought to myself, now he's singing my song here.
Right.
You know, he's finally, he's talking about something that matters. Too often, and I said this in today's market update at the CNB on the CME site, I said too often people look at numbers. I want people to ignore the number and look at the valuation. All right?
Right.
Understand what's happening, what makes that number, and why something is either undervalued or overvalued. If we were trading at 30 or 40 times earnings, I would nowhere near be as bullish as I am right now. All right? But the fact of the matter is we're not. We are trading fundamentally at what is a sound PE on this market. Now, the question is it sustainable? And I guess I'll ask you that only because looking at these economic releases these last couple of days, all right, you know, and you've always told me look at 3 months, but the last couple have not been all that great. You know, we've seen an uptick in jobless claims. We've seen that. Tell me, number one, should I start to worry? Okay. Number two, what do these weak numbers tell you? Or do you even bother looking at them until they give you two or three in a row?
I tend to try to look at the series. That's a very good point. And, in fact, one of the key indicators has been pretty lackluster, and that's something we look at, and it came out a little bit better than expected on the release earlier this month. That was U.S. retail sales. Previous month was quite disappointing, a minor minus column versus a minor plus that was expected. But on average, retail sales are flatlining. And, Jack, what you hear about the P.E. expansion, the only fly in the ointment, is whether the E is going to continue
whether,
to improve.
Whether earnings will continue to grow. And to be honest, I do not see any reason why we cannot see them continue to grow at that 4 to 6 to 7% rate. If you include dividend flow, if you include the rest of it, there's no reason, in my mind, I don't see any reason why we can't sustain that.
And that's where we get into our big discussion that we've had before about the impact about the most pernicious program out there that may, thank you, Internal Revenue Service, may be coming under some fire and may be rolled back substantially. That's Obamacare. Wouldn't it be funny? If this is the ultimate irony.
If the scandal ended up,
IRS was responsible for the economy dodging the bullet on Obamacare.
Well, it's funny you say that because I was just saying one of the things that I was asked by Larry Kudlow on his radio show the other day. I love doing that show, by the way, because I'm on for half an hour. It's not like being on his TV show
and not only
where
that,
I'm only on
Larry,
for...
Larry's such an enlightened guy.
Oh, he's so smart.
Who is always looking at the same from 30,000 feet and thinking about the offbeat, the non-standard ideology.
Well, he's an Ivy League trained economist, folks. I mean, right. The man is very, very bright. But what I was saying, I said, he seems to believe that this IRS scandal, the Benghazi scandal, and everything else that's happening to the administration is going to seize any effort to come up for government to govern. All right. In other words, right. if Washington doesn't do anything, it's actually bullish for the market. Now, I, on the other hand, think that this is an excellent opportunity for the Republicans to use this for tax reform. Look, you and I know, and the reason I bring it up, and I don't want to get into politics on this show because we got a lot to cover, but you have got a handful of CEOs that are going to Capitol Hill this week. All right, we have got Chambers, we have got Cook that are going there and are asking the president to help do something about repatriating the billions, literally hundreds of billions of dollars that are sitting overseas, because these execs are tired of sitting on these big chunks of money because it's growing faster and faster in what turns out to be the franchises of these various banks. Somebody said, oh, you know what, it's an HSBC. It's one of the biggest banks in the world. No, it's a franchise of HSBC in Sao Paulo or in China. You know, it's not secure. It's not like it is governed here by law. You know, so I guess what I'm saying is I guess it's more rhetorical than anything else. I don't expect an answer to it, but I would really hope that that's what the Republicans would do. They would seize the opportunity for tax reform.
Well, and there is the general aspect of tax reform. And as some people said, and again, not to get too political, we want to get on to more market discussion. But the fact of the matter is, you have a situation where the know-nothing Obama administration, I mean, one of the complaints of Republicans that became more pronounced in the IRS hearings was, we get all you people in front of us, we call you in, and it's like you didn't realize you're going to be at a congressional inquiry. It's like Eric Holder. Well, who knew what when? I'll have to look into that. Miller from the IRS. Who was the person who gave the actual order? Well, I don't have those notes in front of me. Well, can you get your notes? I don't know if I have any notes.
I guess the last thing I'll say about it is I am tired of hearing my president say that he got the information the same time as I got it on television. You know, look, I expect my president to get the information well ahead of me. All right?
And especially now that they have established that there were people before the election in May of 2012 in the administration who were told what was going on at the IRS, and they just kind of like looked
let
the
it
other
go.
Way.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's amazing
but
how that
beside
happens.
That,
well, I want to talk about some other things, Alan. Let's go on to other things here. Let's talk a little bit about Europe, all right, only because, you know, Europe is still there. Let's talk a little bit about Asia. You know, I mentioned the other day, people quietly, the Nikkei is up 45% for the year.
Right.
You know, even Jim LeCampo's like, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, you got to be, you know, you can't be in yen. Well, even if you were in yen, you know, that yen's only down about 15 or 20% versus the dollar, isn't it? I mean, maybe a little bit more.
A little more. But
my point
nowhere
is
near as much as the Nikkei
nowhere
is
near
up.
As the Nikkei is up. Right. So give me your take on what's going on in Europe and Asia, and then let's swing it back down to the States here.
Well, Europe is still suffering because you don't shake off the kind of austerity they put themselves through in a heartbeat. You know, we had Italian industrial new orders and industrial sales today. They're still weak year-on-year figures. They blipped up a little bit on the month, but you're off between 7 and 10% year-on-year, and they're just feeling it. They have no way to reinvigorate that economy except by going a little lighter on austerity, and I hope that the quid pro quo, that the people who want to see the fiscal situation resolved there, what they ask if you're going to have less austerity, more labor market reform. That's always been Europe's big problem. As you said, Jack, the regulations here, how we're headed down the path Europe was on, and you must have fewer regulations, more of an open economy, if you're going to have everybody prosper.
Well, you know what? I just look at it and ask myself very logically, how many times do you have to bang yourself against the head before you start to say, you know what? This actually hurts.
Right.
You know?
It doesn't feel good.
It doesn't feel good. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, I mean, it's silly to me, but that's just the
right.
way it is.
And moving on to Asia, the very interesting aspect of that is the degree to which China is succeeding in moving toward a more consumerist economy that ultimately will be a more stable turnover. We've discussed that on previous shows, but they still have one problem. For the growth they're trying to instill, they're trying to do it with coal. And what's happened is very interesting. And again, I'm a conservative, but I also entertain all views because you have to be open-minded. One of my favorite shows at the weekend is Fareed Zakaria, GPS.
Oh, he's great. I think he's fantastic.
He's terrific.
Yeah.
One of the smartest guys in the room at all times. And you know what he said? He said the West must, even under license where they get paid for it, be willing to share fracking technology with China. China has bigger shale oil reserves than the U.S. by 50%, and ours are huge. They've got to help China continue an accelerated growth path, but do it by having energy usage that's cleaner than the new coal plants they're putting up left, right, and center.
Okay, now that's interesting you say that, because until China is actually not considered hostile, because there are still...
That is the problem.
You know, I mean, we still have to keep in mind, as much as we hate to, that China is still a communist nation.
Yep.
And communism, you know, as by definition, all right, sees its enemy as capitalism. So I guess I'm just saying that I do still see a little bit of that. And we are of the generation that still
right.
remembers the Cold War,
well,
like, you know, very vividly.
And
so.
Even the degree to which the PLA has gone significantly capitalist... in terms of its endeavors, it is a very aggressive and controlling culture, and that's what they feel they have to do with the size of their population and all that. But you're right. They do have a bit of an antagonistic approach to us and the rest of the West still, and if they could find a way to tone that down a bit, we could help them grow so fast they wouldn't care about the
It's funny.
Politics.
I actually brought that up to a friend of mine who's a resident alien is what you would call him.
Right.
He's from China. And he said, but remember our history, Jack. You know, we were imperialized. We were taken over. You know,
terribly so. By the British.
I mean, everybody got a piece of them. You know what?
Yeah,
you
everyone
still
got
Macau.
Piece.
They still speak Portuguese
but
in Macau. Come on.
Johnson and Matthew were the guys who forced the opium usage on the Chinese population.
Well, you know,
and that
the opium
still
wars,
sticks in their craw.
That's right. And you know what? You're right about that. But anyway, let's bring it back to the good old U.S. of A. I'm convinced that we are the prettiest girl at the dance. All right? I mean, you know, as much as we might have frizzy hair and much as we, you know what I mean? We are looking real good these days. You
right.
know what I mean?
The other ladies are, shall we say, in a bit of disrepair. So no, but
I hope that, you know, I hope that didn't sound sexist, Alan. I didn't mean, you know what,
no.
We should say the handsomest man at the dance. All right,
there
whereas everybody else is looking disheveled.
Even,
all right,
even with our weaknesses, we're looking like the one everyone wants to go out and date. No doubt about it.
I mean, is that we're attracting capital from all over the world, and I guess the real question is, you know, number one, do you see capital coming out of commodities into the markets like I do? Where do you see it coming from, and how sustainable in your mind is this? Let's go through some projections.
Well, I think it's very sustainable because you think in terms of your BRICS and your emerging economies, they're not doing quite so well anymore. They've kind of gone where they had to on the curve, and they're suffering now. Look at where the weakness is. It's in Brazil, whose currency got significantly overvalued because of the rush to invest and trade with them. You look at various other countries, even Canada across the border is not doing as well as we are for various reasons on which their growth was based previous. We are seeing a real, resurgence of the general economy. People are comfortable investing here because it's well-balanced. It's not one sector, and that's where the consumer comes into the equation again, though. Will the American consumer continue to consume at a rate that supports all that? For right now, the market says yes, and you know we may top. We backed off a bit. Now, interestingly enough, we've tested that 1669 to 73 in the SP. We backed off a bit. But even if we get a bit of bad data, The question is, well, how bad can it really get here? Our banking system is so well capitalized now and things like that. Even as someone who's a bit skeptical about Obamacare and all that, I know the next trip back down to low 1600s from upper 1600s where we are relatively at present, that major gap from after that non-farm payrolls report down 1594 to 1606, that's lead contract futures, folks, not cash. Cash would be at a slight premium to that. You get down around 1620 or so, there's going to be the whole world waiting to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the way I
Well, that's
it.
Also my 3 to 5% pullback, which, as I was saying before, is exactly what we should be looking for. You know, how about commodities? I mean, I'm looking at gold getting beat up. I'm looking at, you know, copper back on its lower end. I know it's a function of the strengthening dollar, but, you know, and one of the things that I said on today's market update on the CME site is that there are some very amazing opportunities in these metals. When you see something go 8 straight sessions in one direction, which gold did, that's a parabolic move, whether it be up or down.
And that's true.
And you need to take advantage of that when you're a trader. Give me your take on what's going on there.
What's going on in gold is after the lengthy churn up at the high end, after it hit 1900 at the highs a couple of years ago and then kept returning to about 1800 as highs, it was just attracting more and more buying, in part, I think, because of something you noted, which is how easy it became to own gold as a security through the ETFs. So more and more people wanted to own it.
The
and
ETF effect, that's one of the reasons.
When the love affair was over, you know, it was kind of like you dump the old significant other. Well, talk about dumped. When once they didn't love it anymore, everyone hated it. But more so, as the sensibility came along to average investors, and they were starting to say, oh, I can get out of this ETF, it's not working, etc. The guys who run the ETFs are in a forced position. It's forced selling.
That's it. It's, you know, and it's liquidation. What happens is, it's, remember, it's a derivative of a derivative. Probably one of the more inefficient things out there, and I hate to say that because my good friend is one of the crew that created the GLD.
Right.
All right? So, you know what? He's that Presidian, great guy, Danny McCabe. I love him. Old friend. I've known him for 20 years, and he was one of the guys that created the GLD. But for me, there's that flaw because it's a futures contract that trades as a security, and that's
right.
One of the things that I don't like. Alan, what do we got coming out this week? I mean, look, you know, I got existing home sales on Wednesday here in the States, durable goods on Friday, historic new home sales on Thursday. Historically, this is usually a quiet time for the markets, as I was trying to say earlier, because we've got the Memorial Day holiday next weekend, which seems to stifle things. But is there something out there that you're watching that you know, especially in Europe or Asia, that seems to be on your radar screen?
Well, Jack, it's actually in its way. Without the Fed or the Bank of England or the ECB, it's a big central bank week. There's a lot of central bank speak around starting tomorrow. Kind of a quiet day today, but you end up with the Reserve Bank of Australia policy meeting minutes overnight. That was interesting.
Well,
don't
forget, that was
a surprise rate cut.
You know what? You're going to say it was slow, but no, we had Fisher come out and say he was about the tapering today instead of stopping. I thought that was very significant.
There's a lot of central bank speak, and the RBA, it was a surprise rate cut, so their minutes, which come out overnight, basically come out at 8:30 this evening our time, are going to be very interesting. And again, there's along with that, Wednesday morning early, overnight for us, you've got the Bank of Japan rate non-decision because they aren't changing it at all. But you're going to, again, on an enlightened basis, the new head of the BOJ, Mr. Kuroda, he's running press conferences now. He's gone to school on Mario Draghi. I'm not only going to let people know we're easing, but I'm talking about all the ways, all the levers we're pushing.
They're not going to do anything to stop chopping down those trees along the mountainside of Mount Fuji and printing up yen. You know that.
Later on Wednesday, we get the Fed minutes. You talk about what Fisher said today. We'll know more that went on at the meeting. And as you get lower on Thursday, a little later in the day, but still early morning our time, the European advanced PMIs for May.
I like
and
that.
That's important because we're talking about Europe being weak. And throughout the day on Thursday, then, you have a huge amount of Fed speak and Friday as well. So a German IFO on Friday. Tons
Alan,
of stuff.
Alan, I love it. Alan Rohrbach, folks, again, roar-blog, one of the best bloggers on the street if you want his work. He's also doing some stuff with the good old guys at BBI. This is Jack Baroogian for Alan Rohrbach. You guys have a marvelous day. And remember what Alan was saying. Pay attention to these Fed speakers over the course of the next week. We'll be talking to you tomorrow.
views and opinions expressed in the preceding program are not necessarily those of this radio station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult the appropriate advisor before making any financial decisions. All rights reserved.